Hey everybody, it's Michelle Fisher and welcome into A View From My Window. As always, I thank you for joining us today. There are some changes that I want to let you know about concerning ABA therapy. For more on these changes, I'm talking to Michelle Trovetti, the ARC Insurance Project Manager. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Michelle.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Great. It's nice to see you.
Good to see you.
And so now we're talking about, before you and I had talked about ABA not being covered by Medicaid,
mm-hmm,
but now correct. Medicaid is supposed to be covering ABA therapy.
Yes, correct.
So talk a little bit about how that's going to go.
Fantastic. We're very excited to have ABA therapy for autism spectrum disorder now be a covered condition and a covered benefit, mm-hmm, under Medicaid. Mm-hmm. This policy went into effect on February 6th. So it's in the beginning stages of this policy, just a couple months old, couple, mm-hmm, months into it. And there's been a lot of confusion, quite frankly, about the policy. So as family advocates, we're always trying to work together to bring correct information and up-to-date information out to the public. So thank you for having me on this podcast so we can do that. ABA therapy for autism spectrum disorder is now covered under Medicaid under a program that's called EPSDT.
Another acronym,
the alphabet soup of healthcare, so to speak. And EPSDT is the Early Periodic Screening, Diagnosis, and Treatment Program under Medicaid. It's under all plans in Medicaid. You don't have to apply for EPSDT. It's a program that's in all types of Medicaid. Okay. So any child that has Medicaid, whether because of income or because of disability, their Medicaid program has EPSDT in it, and it must cover ABA therapy for children who are diagnosed with autism, okay, spectrum disorder. So that's one thing that's been a little bit confusing for, sure, families is, do I have the right type of Medicaid?
Mm-hmm.
Whichever Medicaid program you're in, it does need to cover autism therapy, including ABA, for any child diagnosed with autism who is under the age of 21,
okay,
in this EPSDT program. This EPSDT program, it was designed back in the 60s, actually, and its purpose is to help prevent disability and disabling conditions,
right,
among children.
Yeah.
So that's why autism treatment and ABA therapy specifically have been moved under this program, because it's been determined that it's a medically necessary service.
Okay.
And so therefore it should be provided also as a preventative service under this EPSDT program.
Why did it happen? What changed to make this happen?
Well, coverage for autism has really been evolving for a number of years. And actually it started here in Indiana. We were the first state in the United States to pass an autism health insurance mandate.
Okay.
And my daughter, coincidentally, was the first person covered under,
yay,
that mandate. And was the test case for most of those for that coverage. So this has really been an evolving area. And so Medicaid has been part of that evolution of recognizing that autism does have treatments. It does have, it is a condition, a medical condition that can be managed. And there is some treatment that is very effective, namely ABA therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And also, quite frankly, there were some lawsuits in other states. There was litigation in three different states, Ohio, Florida, and I apologize, I'm forgetting the third one, where
you and I talked about that last
time. Yes, where it was determined by the courts that, mm-hmm, as a medical condition, autism therapy, ABA therapy, needed to be provided under Medicaid under this EPSDT program, where previously it was excluded. So Indiana was kind of getting on board with those federal guidelines and those federal guidelines to bring autism treatment into that program.
Sure. Talk about approved providers.
Sure. Under Medicaid, for a family to access ABA therapy, they have to have the therapy done by a provider who is, first and foremost, a Medicaid provider.
Okay.
So they have to have applied to be a provider with Medicaid and under the correct provider type.
Mm-hmm.
So that's up to the provider to do. I'm not going to,
yeah,
confuse families with, you know, with all of that information. But suffice it to say that they have to check to make sure first that their ABA provider is a Medicaid provider.
Mm-hmm.
Then, if they're a Medicaid provider, then they are a provider under traditional Medicaid,
okay,
which is the type of Medicaid that comes with the Medicaid waivers.
Okay.
if the child is in a managed Medicaid program, so if they're in a Medicaid program that is managed by Anthem or managed by MedWise mm-hmm. or managed by MHS, mm-hmm. then they also have to make sure that their ABA provider is a credentialed provider with that managed care company.
Okay.
So, for example, if I wanted my daughter to get Medicaid coverage for ABA, mm-hmm. and if she were in a MHS managed Medicaid product, I would have to make sure, first of all, that her ABA therapy company was a Medicaid provider, mm-hmm. and then second of all, make sure that they are a provider with MHS.
Okay.
So you have to do that.
What if they're not?
If they're not, then they need to seek out a provider who is,
okay.
or they need to request that their provider become a Medicaid provider and see if they're willing to do that.
Okay.
So not all ABA providers are going to accept Medicaid, and even if they do accept Medicaid, they may not be with that particular managed care company.
Okay.
They may be with Anthem, but not with MedWise, or they may be with MedWise, but not with MHS, for example. So you'd first want to check with the provider to see if they are a provider in the program that your child is in.
Sure. Let's talk about the delivery of therapy.
What sort of things,
how does that all work?
Sure. Right now, Medicaid is covering therapy that is delivered in a center-based program. So the child actually goes to a building to receive therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And they will cover the board-certified behavior analyst, a board-certified associate behavior analyst, or a registered behavioral technician performing that therapy.
Okay.
Medicaid is currently now also covering ABA therapy in the home and in public school settings. However, they are only covering the board-certified behavior analyst time in those two settings. So So that is a limitation right now that I'm sure we'll be talking about and discussing with Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, that is how therapy is permitted to be delivered at this point.
Okay, let's talk about then, what is a credentialed registered behavioral technician?
Yeah, that is a confusing term for a lot of people. It's actually a new credential.
Oh,
it's a credential that's national. It's from the national certifying body that certifies providers of applied behavior analysis therapy, the board certified behavior analyst. And so the certification board, the behavior analysis certification board, again, back to some alphabet soup, the BACB.
Uh-huh.
if people want more information about that, it's bacb.org. That's a national accrediting body that gives out that people can earn certification through if they are a behavior analyst.
Oh, okay.
And so one hole, so to speak, that they saw in the delivery of ABA therapy is that they had a credential for the board certified behavior analyst. They had a credential for the board certified associate or assistant behavior analyst, but they didn't have a credential for that frontline interventionist who was spending a lot of time delivering the intervention that was designed by the board certified behavior analyst.
Mm-hmm.
So they developed that and it went into effect less than a year ago. And so right now, a lot of local providers are trying to get their staff through the training that's necessary for their frontline staff to be an RBT.
Mm-hmm.
That includes over 1,000 hours of supervised training.
Wow.
The RBT candidate has to do that training with a BCBA, and then they also have to pass an exam. And it can take several weeks to get through the training process. It can also take several weeks to get through the testing process and to get back your results.
No doubt.
So yeah. So we are finding that that a lot of providers didn't have RBTs yet, or they were in the process of training their folks, but hadn't quite finished the process. So we have been notified that Medicaid is allowing some grace period for that in order to allow the providers to get ramped up and to get their folks through that several week training process just to help with access.
Sure.
'Cause an RBT is required by Medicaid to provide the frontline therapy. So that's been wonderful to give the providers a little bit of a grace period in that so that more children can access the service and
sure.
they can have some breathing room in terms of getting their staff up to getting that credential.
And obviously this isn't in our information, but Do you think that's why it's kind of slow going? Is because you have to have so much training, and so the law coming out and the law saying you must do this, there's catch up time, you know?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, access has been a problem for a number of reasons. There's a lot of confusion about what the policy is and how it should be implemented. But then also, too, there were very, very few ABA providers who were Medicaid providers.
Okay.
And it can take quite a bit of time to get through the process of even applying to be a Medicaid provider. So that if they get through that and become a Medicaid provider, then they have to go again and apply to be a provider with the managed care company. So there's kind of two steps they have to go through. All of those things take time. Each of those steps takes weeks to complete, sometimes even months to complete. So access has been a real problem simply because of an assumption that it's not covered, because it wasn't covered in the past. So getting that information out to families, helping families understand the coverage, can be an access barrier to access. But then the lack of providers is also a huge barrier to access, because you know, if you're lucky enough to have five or six providers in your area and have choice, if only one or two take Medicaid, they can only take so many Medicaid patients or Medicaid learners or clients, which they call them different things. So they can only take so many children in the Medicaid program. So that can be a barrier for access as well.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that as more and more providers get through the application process, access will certainly improve. But it's going to take some time to get everyone ready and to get everyone trained, get the RBTs on board, and for providers to put their systems in place to be able to bill Medicaid and to do those things to really have the program be accessible at the level that we would want it to be.
Sure. So let's talk about what parents need to know to access services for the EPS DT in all Medicaid health plans. What do they need to know about accessible services for that?
Sure. First and foremost, the child under age 21 who wants to access ASD services or autism services through EPS DT, they have to have a medical diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. So we have had families, you know, say, well, my child is in the public school. They've been in the public school for 8 years under a designation of having autism spectrum disorder. They have an IEP because they have autism, but they've never been evaluated, or they have not been evaluated in quite some time by a medical professional, by a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a developmental pediatrician or a neurologist, and given that medical diagnosis of autism. So that's the first step. If the child does not have an established medical diagnosis of autism, or if it is very outdated, they would want to make sure to access that first, because that will then drive the process and open up the door for them to access those services. So the first thing is to get that medical diagnosis. And Medicaid calls the professional that the person who needs to do that diagnosis is called a QMP, or a qualified medical professional. And
another acronym
to add to our alphabet soup. And and also that they really want to see a diagnosis done by through a comprehensive evaluation. So that could possibly mean a multidisciplinary approach to that, meaning a physician with perhaps a psychologist or perhaps a speech pathologist, a couple different professionals from different disciplines looking at the child. It definitely means more than I interview mom and I write on a script pad, child has autism. They do want to see a comprehensive evaluation, looking at all of the DSM-5 criteria for diagnosing autism and documenting how does that child fit into those diagnostic criteria.
Okay.
So they'll want to make sure that they have that in the child's medical record before accessing services, because that's something that they will need to have.
And then
and that is something that Medicaid pays for through EPSDT, that diagnosis, that screening, that's all part of that alphabet soup of EPSDT. So that should not be a barrier to gaining that for the child.
And then they have an individualized treatment plan too?
Yes. Then they would work with that diagnosing physician or diagnosing qualified medical professional to talk about what the treatment plan should look like, kind of in a global sense. Does the child need speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy? Do they need behavioral therapy? If mm-hmm. so, what should that look like? Should it be intensive? Or it does it just need to be focused on a few behaviors? How severe is the child? What are their medical needs? What meets medical necessity? And they'll have that discussion with the diagnosing physician and with the team that may be involved in diagnosing. And then if ABA is going to be part of that picture, then they would need to work with their diagnosing physician or clinician, qualified medical professional, to find an ABA provider who is of high quality and also who is a Medicaid provider, and then work with them to do that more detailed, personalized, individualized treatment plan. And that would be submitted to Medicaid then for approval through their regular pre-authorization process.
So then, because of that individualized treatment plan, obviously it tells you that this child needs ABA therapy or has a need for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we focus in on this topic. What is medical necessity under Medicaid or the EPSDT?
Sure. Medical necessity is one of those terms that a lot of people find to be confusing.
Yeah.
And on the private insurance, a lot of insurers have their own definitions of medical necessity. For the purposes of Medicaid and for EPSDT, the definition of medical necessity is quite broad. There's not one federal level definition of medical necessity that's been written into Medicaid law or anything like that. But because the purpose of this EPSDT program is to prevent disability, the Health and Human Services and the federal government and this state plan all takes that into consideration in terms of putting down the reasons why a child would qualify for medical necessity under EPSDT. It's not just that, okay, you have a condition and we can treat it in this narrow sense. They also have to take care into consideration the child has a condition. The condition could result in lifelong disability. And so we not only are going to treat what's going on with that child right now, we are also going to look at what does that child need to prevent any potential future disability from that condition. So it's a broader scope. It's a broader definition of medical necessity than you might see outside of the EPSDT program.
Right.
And so, and if you look on the website for Health and Human Services, and if you Google EPSDT medical necessity, what will come up is a discussion about that. Since EPSDT is to prevent disability, the concept of medical necessity within that program is necessarily broad.
Okay.
So
broader than before? Or
that's how it's always been since the since this program began back in the 60s. It's had a much broader definition of medical necessity than maybe a private health insurance plan would have because its whole purpose is to prevent that prevent disability from that condition and to prevent disability among children. So that's why it focuses on ages zero at birth to 21.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why that program is limited to birth to 21 because it really is preventive in nature. And so in order to prevent disability, they really do have to look at a broader scope than let's just treat what's going on with you today without consideration to the future. They really have to look at the whole person, the whole child, and how could this disable this child as an adult? We need to work to prevent that through this program.
Mm-hmm.
So it necessarily is going to be a little bit broader than might be under a private accident or health insurance plan.
This is a confusing process.
Very confusing.
We've touched only the surface, but how do people get the help they need as far as who they contact,
Sure. Well, in terms of accessing healthcare under the EPSDD program, for children, you always are going to want to start with your pediatrician. Okay. You're going to start with them for guidance, for referral, and to kind of open the doors for you in terms of of accessing treatment under this EPSDD program. And again, remembering that this is the Medicaid health insurance piece of what the child has. So it's going to be medically driven. You're going to want to touch base and visit your physician, your child's physician, and also your child's autism-specific physician, whether that's a developmental pediatrician or a neurologist or a psychiatrist. Those two providers should work together to get those doors open. And then if ABA is part of that picture, then bring them into that discussion to devise the individualized treatment plan and to work through the process to get those services pre-authorized. In terms of understanding the process and getting questions answered, of course, the ARC and your family advocacy programs are wonderful resources, and we all try to work together just to get the best information out there to families. So utilize us as a resource. Call the ARC. Call your Autism Society, your local ally. Call Family Voices. Call About Special Kids. Get on their websites. Get on the ARC's website and just do a little bit of reading. We try to put together some short pieces of information that distill down some of the confusing pieces of it. We have a fact sheet, a frequently asked question sheet up on our website about this program and about ABA therapy under Medicaid and EPSDT. I think it's about 3 pages long, so you can get through it fairly quickly and get some basic information and then kind of gather up your questions and then give one of those organizations that worked on it together a call to get your specific questions answered, because we're here for the families and we really want them to access this program. Sure. It's a can be really a wonderful program and can really open up therapy for a lot of children who haven't had access to it before. Mm-hmm. So we're very excited about it. We're very grateful to the state for putting it together and trying to get it out as quickly as they did. And there's always bumps in the road in new programs. It's no matter what, there are always new bumps in the road with something new coming down the pike. And so we're here for families to try and smooth those over and get answers and ask questions and get good information out to families as quickly as we can, but also as accurately as we can. So bring us your questions and bring us your experiences as well, because we're also here to help troubleshoot as well. So,
well, Michelle, thank you so much for taking time today
Absolutely.
To explain all of this. And thank you so much for helping families the way that you do.
My pleasure. I enjoy it. And thank you very much for having me.
You are so welcome. And thank you, everybody, for listening today. Again, we'll have all this information on www.arcind.org. Thank you so much for listening again today, everybody. Have a great day today. Bye-bye.